I wanted to know what do you think, what do you feel? Sri Aurobindo and the Veda can mean for a Western today?
Well, it is a question of history as a whole. And I think that when I speak of history, it is not a history of the West or of the East, but the whole of humanity. Because the significance of the Veda is related to the human quest. The question is, what is the root from where the quest of humanity has sprung? It so happens that the earliest preoccupation of humanity in its awakened thought has been recorded. And that record happens to be the Veda. It's a book of knowledge, as it is called in India. It is true that the quest is not limited to India alone. We know that there was an age of mysteries in the early Greek times in the West. But what exactly was the content of that mystery? And if you ask the question, if there is any historical record available of that mysterious knowledge which was acquired in ancient times, it is difficult to decipher in precise terms. There are myths, there are allegories, there are stories, there are legends. But as far as the record is concerned, which you can open, which you can study, which can even be a material for a scholar, it so happens that Veda is still available to us. A book of knowledge which was composed at least 5,000 years ago. And it is a surprising fact that in India, this text has been preserved for such a long period of time, intact. It's a fact that a system was developed in India to keep the memory of the details of the text alive. And the way in which the text of the Veda was recited 5,000 years ago is now being recited even today in India in the same manner. It is because in India a great value was attached to the contents of this great work. It's a great work because of two reasons. It is because it is a huge collection. It is about 20,000 verses. And the message of this content is so important and so much significant that if you want to trace the history of mankind, you have got to take into account the heritage of this great text. In India, the significance and importance of the Veda has been recognized throughout. Right from the beginning of Indian history, when we speak of Indian history, we speak of the Vedic age. The age when the Veda was composed, when the Vedic literature was spread by oral tradition, and when Veda was revered by the people, and the message of Veda was revisited from time to time. Therefore, in India today, even today, Veda is a living reality. It is not merely something that was believed in or which was understood in the ancient times and which is now forgotten, but we can trace back into the museums or in the libraries in ancient books. No. In my own case, in my personal life, I began to study the Veda at the age of 7. And even till today, I continue to study this great work. It's a difficult work because the language is antique. It is symbolic. And it has a kind of a meaning which it is not easy to detect. But once the key is obtained, once the symbolism is understood, one gets a definitive knowledge, not only a glimpse, but a knowledge of the quest of the Vedic rishis, the Vedic seers had attempted to acquire and had acquired. You spoke of Sri Aurobindo and the Veda, and I'm very happy that you spoke of this connection. That is because in our own times, it was around 1910 that Sri Aurobindo himself turned to the study of the Veda. This was the time when the Veda was being looked upon by the Western scholars as a book of early primitive barbaric search, and it was considered to be a kind of a collection of hymns addressed by the primitive man to various forces of nature, earth, water, fire, lightning, clouds, rain, and so on. The question was, is it really a mere quest of the primitive man, afraid of the forces of nature, trying to propitiate them? There was also a belief that Veda is nothing but a system of ritualology, that primitive man in early times decided to have a system of rites, of ceremonies, for various purposes of life. And therefore it was assumed that Veda is a collection of hymns addressed by people in terms of ceremonies and occasions which were important in one's life. The question was, is it merely so? Sri Aurobindo, for the first time in our times, in fact, discovered that Vedic rishis, Vedic seers, were not primitive in the sense of barbaric time. Vedic seers were highly cultured. They were profound in their knowledge, and their knowledge was the knowledge connected with the inner spirit of man, inner psychology of man, and also a system of knowledge of the world. They tried to relate man with the world, and world with many forces which are invisible and yet active in the world, which they had discovered. Sri Aurobindo read and revealed, after a laborious scholarship of the algebra of the Vedic symbolism. It is algebra because just as in algebra we have symbolic language of mathematics, similarly it can be said that the Vedic seers had developed the algebra of expressing the inner truths of man and of the universe. This algebra was hidden. It was lying there concealed. Even though there was a tradition in the earlier times which said that the Veda can be understood only by the illumined. There is a tradition right from the beginning We had even a theory of Yaska, an early interpreter of the Veda, who said that Veda should be understood in three senses. In the senses of the physical world as it is, in terms of the supraphysical world, and in terms of the spiritual world, which is even higher than the supraphysical. In all the three terms, the Veda can be interpreted. But the key was lost in due course of time. As a result, when the Western scholars began to study the Veda at the turn of the last century, they could not get into the inner depth of the Veda. And they interpreted the Veda in a very ordinary way, in a very superficial manner. We have the interpretation of Max Müller and the interpretation of Griffith and interpretation of many others in the West, German scholars, French scholars, English scholars. Many interpretations today are available, but mostly connected with the ritualism of the Veda, myths of the Veda, an interpretation which declares that the Veda is a product of the barbarian. According to Sri Aurobindo, this is a pure concoction, a pure fiction, because it does not correspond with the text. And if you understand the text, you find profound meanings. These meanings relate to, first of all, the art and science of life. And you spoke of the relevance of the Veda and Sri Aurobindo to the modern times. And I'm sure that you will agree that today, one of the most important questions is to ascertain what is this art of life. We seem to have forgotten the art of life. That is because we also know basis of science of life. Because science and art are related together. You cannot have a true art of life unless you are based on knowledge of what life is. If you read the Veda, you find that the Vedic rishis had put them before themselves basic question, what is human life? That is a central question of the Veda. And they tried to fathom into the depths of human life. And how did they go about it? They went through the method of introspection, exploration of the psychology of the human personality. It was by a process of concentration, by a process of meditation, by a process of works and effort to make works as perfect as possible. They followed the path of examining the feelings of human beings, emotions of human personality, the depths of human personality's emotions. And they discovered it's possible to combine the knowledge, action, and emotions in their highest heights, in the profoundest depths, and widest widths. So they had the wideness, they had the depth, and they had the heights. And it is not a question of doing this over a short period of time. If you read the Veda, you are convinced that it must be the result of a long effort, of centuries of effort. Therefore, Sri Aurobindo looks upon the Veda as a literature, although an oral literature. It is, of course, now available in the written form. But for a long period of time of history, it was an oral literature. This oral literature was a result of a long period of civilization, not of primitive barbarism, but of a high civilization. Because then only you can have such profound psychology, such profound ethics, and something that may be regarded as beyond ethics. what in India we call the art of yoga. In fact, the word yoga has become very prevalent both in the East and the West. But the roots of the Veda are to be found, the roots of yoga are to be found in the Veda. And what is the meaning of yoga? And what is the relevance of yoga to our present times? That gives us the measure of the need of Veda for the modern times. A methodized effort. Not a random effort, but a methodized effort. A methodized effort by which the potentialities of human being can be cultivated and can be perfected. And by means of this perfection, you can unite the individual with the universe in a harmonious manner. And you can unite both individual and universe with even deeper and higher realities, which you call the spiritual truth, transcendental realities. This is yoga. And the roots of this yoga are to be found in the Veda. Now, if you ask the question, what was the basic quest, the direction of that quest, and what was achieved? If you ask the sum total of the Vedic acquisition, and here also, Sri Aurobindo in his great book, which he has written under the title, The Secret of the Veda, I regard it to be one of the greatest books of our time. If you want to understand the human history in the terms of the psychological quest of humanity, then you will find in this particular book a great insight into man's earliest achievements in psychological terms. There are three important ideas which you find in the Veda. The idea of the truth. There is no book in the world which insists constantly upon the concept of the truth. The second concept is the concept of immortality. And third concept is the concept of perfection. These are the three important concepts that you find in the Veda constantly. It is as if the Vedic rishis were constantly asking these questions. What is the truth? And they found that there is a difference between truth of fact, as we normally find in our empirical world, and the truth in reality. Because we know the appearance and reality do not necessarily coincide. And very often appearances are illusive. And this distinction is clearly mentioned in the Veda. They found out that behind the appearances of the world, behind the apparent facts of the world, there is a world of the truth. They said that we have at present a normal knowledge of the world of matter, world of life, and world of mind. We speak today of evolution, which is very often regarded as one of the greatest achievements of modern times. But surprisingly, the idea of evolution is to be found in the Veda itself. It recognizes that there is, at the root of the universal movement, an evolutionary force. And this force manifests itself through three terms of development: matter, life, and mind. But Veda goes farther and says that there is a fourth world. In Sanskrit it is said Turiyam Svid, the fourth world. There is a fourth world. Svid means a world and Turiyam means a fourth. There is a fourth world. And the fourth world, they said, is the world of the truth. But the truth which is comprehensive, truth that is not piecemeal, truth which is not of today and tomorrow, the truth which is eternal, the truth which is a constant immortal movement, it is at once static and dynamic simultaneously. Surprisingly, it is both a particle and a wave, you might say, in terms of the modern physics. The reality as we find in the Veda describes tad ejati, tad na ejati. It moves It moves not. At the same time, a surprising paradox which is stated very clearly. The Vedic Rishi says that it is a reality which is wonderful because it is neither today nor tomorrow. And although it is stable, it has its own movement out of its stability, and there is a reconciliation synthesis of stability and movement. It is intellectually, logically, sometimes baffling. Therefore, it prescribes to the human being that one has to transcend the ordinary human consciousness, which is now centered in the mental consciousness. In fact, if you read the modern literature, whether it is of physics or of philosophy or psychology, we are, as it were, knocking the gates of the mind at its highest, and we find a great limitation. Even in the terms of physics, when Einstein speaks of the fourth dimension, now that fourth dimension is a concept, but our mind is not able to experience it. When it says that time is the fourth dimension of space-time continuum, what does it mean? We only experience three dimensions. Our human mind is three-dimensional. But Einstein obliges us to recognize the fourth dimension. And our mind cannot grasp it. It is obliged to posit it. But we cannot live in that consciousness because our mind is three-dimensional. Therefore, even to understand the modern physics, we have to break the limitations of the mind. And it is surprising that even in those times in the Veda, the fourth dimension was described, that the reality is fourth dimensional. And it is even multidimensional, not only fourth dimensional, but multidimensional. In the Veda, for example, there is a clear statement which says that light, physical light, is the limit of all the physical speeds in the universe. If you read the sixth chapter of the Rig Veda, there is a statement there which is as modern as anybody's, which says that it is the physical light which is the measure of all the speeds of the world, in the physical world. And there are surprising statements in the Veda which points out that the physical world as we see it is not all. There is a supraphysical world. And this supraphysical world is not something conceptual. It's not merely like Plato's ideas, which are also beyond the physical world, but they are conceptual in character. But the Veda speaks of the supraphysical, which is as active and powerful, or even more powerful than the physical world. It's a great discovery of the Vedic seers. They found that at the depth of human life, our deeper resources of energy are actually derived from the supraphysical. The physical by itself cannot give an account of itself fully. If you try to analyze the physical, you will be led ultimately to the supraphysical. Now, you ask the question once again, I would like to repeat, what is the relevance of all this to the modern man? Now, here also, I would like to invite you to Sri Aurobindo. Sri Aurobindo has discovered what the Vedic rishis aspired for, what they achieved, and what was the highest limit of their achievement, and whether that achievement was final or whether some further achievement is necessary. And Sri Aurobindo affirms that although the foundation of the Veda is necessary, it is not sufficient. And this is the modernity of Sri Aurobindo. He points out that there is a still higher realm to be conquered. There is still higher reality to be established on this earth, which was still not established by the Vedic rishis. He considers that the Vedic quest of truth, of immortality, of perfection, remained up to a certain level of achievement, it was lost, forgotten, revisited from time to time, but not fully recaptured. It is very significant that Sri Aurobindo, he made a tremendous effort to recover all that was in the past, not only in the Veda, but if you consider this genius of Sri Aurobindo, he had a complete mastery of Western culture, complete mastery over Indian culture. It is in his genius that East and West met together in a great reconciliation. And with that vast effort of his consciousness, in fact, Sri Aurobindo is regarded as an adventure of consciousness. There is a great book of Satprem, who has written a great book on Sri Aurobindo, which is called Sri Aurobindo or the Adventure of Consciousness. And this book points out that Sri Aurobindo continued that great quest of the Vedic Rishis, embraced the quest of man throughout the centuries in the world history, and standing at the peak of all these achievements of the past, looks still beyond. If you read Sri Aurobindo's great magnum opus, his great book, which is called The Life Divine, we find in that book a great statement. If you look at the present crisis of man, he says, what is in the Veda has to be recovered fully, but there is still much more to be done. What is that much more to be done? His whole life was devoted to that. That which was to be done, much more. So that Vedic knowledge becomes relevant by his effort, because he added to that knowledge. He discovered a new knowledge. In fact, not only added, he discovered new knowledge. And if you combine all this, you find it is highly relevant today. If you ask me this question then, what is the briefest way in which we can capture Sri Aurobindo's achievement? You might know that Sri Aurobindo used the word supermind. Sri Aurobindo said, the discovery of the supermind was a great discovery of the Vedic Rishis, which was lost in the history of time. But Sri Aurobindo recovered that quest and rediscovered the supermind. And he examined the potentialities of the supermind for the modern man. He examines the present crisis of man in terms of evolution. And he feels that evolution has come to such a critical stage of development, which occurs only when evolution is going to create a new mutation. We know that in history of evolution, there are stages of mutation, when one species gives rise to the next species by a process of mutation, a sudden change. Sri Aurobindo sees that the present crisis is a crisis of consciousness. Mental consciousness has come to a point where it cannot deal with the problems which now confront mankind. Why? Because the fabric of the world has now become united. It has become global. And therefore, the system of life has become global. The mind of man today has become global. The technology that we are creating today automatically becomes global. And even interrelationships of human beings have now a global context. It is found, therefore, that the human mind, unless it becomes global in its own consciousness, you cannot deal with the globality of the world in which we live. And that is the crisis. We remain still limited in our piecemeal manner of thinking. And yet the demands of the world are that you must become global, you must become universal. The problems are universal, you require a universal consciousness to deal with them. Therefore, if you want to deal with these problems, there just has to be a mutation of the human consciousness. And Sri Aurobindo said that the evolution is knocking at our doors, demanding from us to break our limits and to develop a new kind of consciousness, which Sri Aurobindo calls development of supramental consciousness. It is the supramental consciousness which is relevant to the present man. The Vedic rishis had discovered the supermind. They had tried to apply the supermind to the different planes of mind and life and body. And yet, it was not enough because, as Sri Aurobindo pointed out, unless a supermind permeates into the physical, this mutation won't take place. So there is a difference between the development of supermind in the mind and life and body on the one hand, and the permeation of the supermind in the body. And this permeation of the supermind in the body was a central task done by Sri Aurobindo and his collaborator, the Divine Mother. Both of them joined together and developed a new kind of yoga. It, of course, takes into account the entire yogic effort of the Veda, but a new yoga has been developed. The modern man requires new knowledge, and that new knowledge Sri Aurobindo gives through his new yoga, the integral yoga as it is called. And therefore, the Veda, Sri Aurobindo, integral yoga, supramental descent, supramental manifestation, the human body, and mutation of humanity into superhumanity. These terms are all interrelated, and that is the relevance of Sri Aurobindo and the Veda to the modern man. All right?
Very good.
Fine? The time is up, no?
Yeah.
Yeah? Fine.